Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah, and no Therapist Kelly today. She is on a fossil farm doing some crazy stuff with her boys. But I have somebody very special in studio with me today. His name is Marlon Young, and he is going to be co-hosting the show. Say hello, Marlon.
Hello.
But now I'm going to give some background on you because you have a great bio.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Marlon Young was born in Hampton, South Carolina, and has lived in Los Angeles for the past 29 years. He's become a recognizable face in the film and television community, due in part to having played memorable roles on popular TV shows such as Entourage, Criminal Minds, The Goldbergs, and MTV's The Hard Times of R.J. Berger. While serving as a fighter helicopter pilot in the U.S. Army, Marlon's personal studies turned to relationships and self-improvement through his studies and conversations with both women and men who had much success in the area of relationships. He discovered the most important factors that are absent from men in today's modern dating landscape: the ability to achieve a balance of comfort in one's masculinity, coupled with creating an environment wherein women feel that their emotional core is fully appreciated and understood. Over the years, Marlon became the adjunct counselor to hundreds of men, teaching them how to improve their core confidence in themselves, how to attract the woman that they truly desire in their life, and how to improve their current relationship status. He's also wrote and narrated the male-oriented book, The Last Dinosaur, An Every Man's Guide to the New Woman. Welcome, Marlon.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
You were on the show a while back to talk to us
about The Last Dinosaur. Yeah. The Last Dinosaur, The Every Man's Guide to the New Woman, audio book.
Yeah, exciting. So, you know what? We have some excitement today.
Yes.
We actually, Kelly and I, have a new sponsor for the show.
Is that right?
Vantage Recovery. And so we're going to start talking about Vantage Recovery. Next week, they're going to be on the show, and they're going to come and do their whole history of how they develop. But I'm going to play their first commercial spot. So everybody, listen up.
Are you getting tired of trying to create a positive life with a negative mind? Vantage Point Recovery believes that the potential wholeness and well-being of our clients depends on a systematic approach to developing an authentic and fulfilling life. Specializing in the treatment of individuals struggling with mental health and substance use disorders, we believe that your journey is our journey. Call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be able to create a shift in the thinking of you or a loved one.
Well, okay, we're back.
That's fantastic.
We have a real commercial. It's so exciting.
About really important stuff.
I mean, it is really important stuff, actually. And I actually know the person who founded Vantage Recovery, and she's really awesome. And they're a good group over there.
Is that right?
Yeah. So if anybody's in trouble in that department.
Nah, fun. It's great. You know, people get to a better place. Try to get to a better place on their own. And some people just need someone who absolutely understands what they're talking about. And what they're trying to go through. And it's hard to find those places. It's even harder to find it just in a regular social setting with a friend. But to find a professional group that can really do it is really awesome.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, now to a lighter subject.
Oh, okay.
Relationships. I don't know anything light about relationships, actually.
No, not at all.
Part of having you on, though, is because I know that you have a very strong male point of view about relationships, and I thought maybe I could bring a little bit of the feminine point of view to it. And sort of like both of us, I think, have an empathetic concept of both genders.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. So
I know that in your work that that really shines through.
Oh, thank you. I think that's the problem. Part of that is a problem that's why some of the friction between men and women still exists, right? We come from these two stern beliefs or ideology about what my perception of the relationship is, as opposed to, well, what are we trying to do here together?
Yeah, people get so stuck in who's right and who's wrong
exactly.
instead of what's actually working for us in our communication. You know, as I think couples really need to take a look at how are they speaking to each other? What is the message that you want to be conveyed? And if your receiver isn't hearing the message, you ought to try to find a different way to say it.
That's right. I say this to Kim, my fiance, that I can hear. I can and want to hear anything you have to say to me as long as you say it with dignity and respect.
I like that.
I'll listen to anything, but you have to do those two things, and I'll do the same. But if you leave out one of those things and then it's yelling and finger pointing and hitting below the belt and name calling and all that stuff, I can't hear you. And I have no desire to hear you.
It's so easy, though, when people are frustrated to drop into that mode. It's almost like the higher levels of our brain shut off, and we're like little kids going, ah!
Yeah, exactly.
And you get frustrated. It's almost like having a temper tantrum.
It is. You know, one of the best things to do when you feel like coming on, one is recognize that it's coming on because it's your thing, right? Is to recognize that's where you're about to get to and stop talking. Which is a great tool. Stop talking. Take a deep breath. Count to 10. And then think of what the message is that you're trying to convey.
You mean just because we have a mouth, we're not supposed to use it all the time? I didn't learn that lesson.
Most people haven't.
I know. Although on radio, we can't be silent because people need to hear us.
Well, that's true.
but my gosh, yeah, that's such a good point. It's so important for people to really calm. We had a guest on one time, and he said, how do you help couples, you know, when they're in conflict? He goes, I tell them to calm the fuck down.
that's a good rule.
It's a good rule,
I use that
in my practice constantly now.
Really?
I have couples in front of me, and there's another author, it's not me, who said, you got to calm the fuck down. I just love it. It's very simple.
Yeah, and I come from a working class blue collar family, so problem solving, and from that generation, right? And from a generation of a place that's a very simple place. It's a place in South Carolina, Hampton, and the towns surrounding Hampton are very small and remote and southern and slow.
Are they?
Yeah, a little slow, but simple in terms of what are we trying to do? How are we trying to solve this problem, right? So when you get that, there's nothing complicated about it. It's like, well, then don't. If you want me to do that, just stop yelling at me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a ton of therapists that we need to go to to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop yelling at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it's founded on a biblical foundation, which is the golden rule, right?
Yes.
Do you want me to yell at you? Well, then don't fucking yell at me. You know, and it's a very simplistic ideology that I think we sometimes, as we get smarter, or we think we're smarter, is we get away from that, right?
Absolutely. I even like. Have you heard of the Platinum Rule?
No.
I like the Platinum Rule even better than the Golden Rule.
Okay.
The Golden Rule is great when you don't have other information, but if you really have information about your partner and you've learned about what your partner likes, then do unto your partner the way your partner asks you to do unto them, which is not always going to be the same as I may want you to do unto me,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
It's kind of like my common thing is like, you know, if I like to be cuddled and cuddling for me feels a certain way and somebody else says, well, I like to be cuddled too, but cuddling for them might look different and feel different, then I want to cuddle you. If I'm going to give you that gift, then I want to give it to you in the way that you're going to experience it.
Interesting. Okay. I like that.
It's kind of like, I guess if there was only one style of massage, we'd be in trouble, right? There's Swedish massage and deep tissue and all that stuff because people like things differently.
Yeah.
So the one caveat I add to that is barring abuse or maltreatment.
Sure.
In other words, I will do unto you as you ask me to, but not if you want me to abuse you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't knock you across the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do it twice. I mean, I'll do it once, but I can't. Do it
just once. Let's see. Do we have more to talk
about
here?
Not an animal. I've had that problem early on with, and this was before I figured out over the years, right? You figure out a different way to
communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had that problem with the yelling at Ben. So you know, you end up talking about it and coming to a better place with yourself and how to figure it out, because I used to be that guy.
Well, in the Army, didn't you have to be? Were you an officer?
I was.
Didn't you have to yell at people? I mean, it's sort of like, what, is that just a total stereotype in the media that we see?
Total stereotype.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, a total stereotype. That used to happen in basic training, but that's a, you know, that's just to get you in shape really quick.
Uh-huh.
But after that, once you learn that there's order to things, and you have to follow orders, and that guy's in charge, and there's a rank structure, and unless your input is going to change the way we do this thing, then you be quiet, that kind of thing, you know, and who's in charge here kind of thing. That's it essentially is no different than, you know, talking as civilians. Once you get out of basic training, it's, what are we trying to do? We're trying to accomplish that. Well, how are we best going to do that? And let's have a conversation about it. It's ultimately my decision, which is the difference, right? It's
right.
Ultimately this officer's decision, because the results are going to fall on him.
Sure.
Which is different in a relationship. But you still get to it from the same place. Hey, let's sit down and talk about this. And if you're yelling, I can't hear you, then, you know.
It's so interesting, too, and I was doing a little bit of research on the Internet. Yeah, Dr. Internet, right? Got all the answers, right?
Right.
But I was thinking it'd be interesting to find some talking points about, you know, what's the current thinking on gender differences these days? And it was interesting because I actually found more stuff pointing to gender similarities. But I know that our brains were wired differently, so I don't know if the sophistication is there in terms of how they do these research studies and such. But it definitely seems like we still have a lot of differences. I think what happens is we tend to not want to acknowledge differences because historically differences meant one was good and one was bad.
Right.
So if you didn't have the good one, then you certainly didn't want to offer up to have the other one.
And then some of it is that the scientific belief is that we're not really that different, right? Mm-hmm. Men and women really aren't different, and our differences are really based on social input, mm-hmm. is what these beliefs have been around for a long time. And I don't know if that's absolutely true. Not a scientist.
No,
but I don't know if that's true.
And I don't know so much either, because it seems like it's almost trendy, right? It was trendy in the past to think that we were different.
Yeah.
Then it was trendy to think that we were more alike.
Yeah.
And the truth is while we all bleed and we have hearts and the same organs and all that kind of stuff, we do tend to. I mean, when I talk to a group of women and I talk to a group of men, I learn different things.
Sure,
people's
right?
perspectives are very different across genders, across culture. How can we not be different?
I think you have to factor that in, as opposed to saying, at the basis we're all the same, because we're just not.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And even if that's just biology or if it's
socialization
Then either one you have to embrace, you know, right?
Yeah.
And understand that we're coming from two different places, and we're still trying to get one place. So how do we get to this one place? Mm-hmm. This is what I say in the book is, and this is from me talking to and. Hundreds of women, if not thousands of women, and having been in relationships with women and being raised by women or raised with women and, you know, and being married to a woman and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. in that women seem to operate primarily from an emotional place, right? It's like most of your decisions are based from an emotional standpoint. Not that you're irrational, that a lot of men like to believe that you are. It's just that they're primarily moved by that.
Mm-hmm. Right? There's an emotional undercurrent to a lot of the decisions that women make.
Yes.
Even if we're not necessarily being absurd or irrational, as you're saying. Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Guys have a way of putting that in a, putting their our emotions on to the side and get to a, how do I fix this thing? What are we trying to fix?
Oh, y'all, fix it. Yeah, fix it, fix it.
That's all we want to do is fix something, you know, on every level, mm-hmm. right? We come home and you're in a bad mood. Got to fix that. Kids need a bike. Got to work another job. Got to fix that.
Yep.
You know, so we come from that place. So it seems we think it's then easier to get to a solution if we have a disagreement. So, what's the problem here then? Let's just find the problem and fix that, and then we don't have to talk about this friggin' problem anymore. As opposed to sometimes for women, seemingly so, if not absolutely so, this her talking about a problem isn't trying to get to a solution of the problem. The problem
Absolutely.
Is sometimes I need to get these feelings out.
Exactly. Just want to be understood. Just want to be have a listening ear to just hear me out so that my feelings are validated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the a lot of the core of what I say to guys, and I say this in The Last Dinosaur, is that what you're trying to overall do, I think, what you're trying to do, is create an environment where the woman in your life feels emotionally safe,
mm-hmm.
right? That you're not challenging her feelings so that she can share this with you, whatever those feelings are about whatever it is that she's talking about, and not feel that she's going to come under attack by you. Well, why do you feel that? Why are you mad about this? Why are you bringing that up now? Well, why don't you talk to her? Why are you talking to me about that?
Dismissive, dismissive, dismissive.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Right.
That won't get you any, will it, Marlon?
No, it didn't. No, it didn't at all. But when I turned it around, it did. And a lot of that comes in, you know, what that looks like, you know, for guys listening, what that looks like is, uh-huh, right. How do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
Huh, so that made you angry. Okay. Is there anything I can do? Okay. I'll just listen. And you have 100% of my attention. No, I'm listening to you, but I'm kind of watching the TV. Oh, yeah, I'm kind of listening, but I got to finish carving this thing. No, I got you. I keep looking at my watch because I got to go meet John at the bar. And yeah, you can't do it. Because that all of that is exactly what you just said. It's all dismissive. And now I can't trust you. I can't trust that you will listen to how I feel about anything. Mm-hmm. So I just won't share those things with you. I'll share those with my girlfriend because girls, you know, they understand. And where we get to in the you know, false security of that, and we don't know why our relationship isn't working, our false security of that is, oh, you need to talk about that thing. Oh, yeah, go with your girlfriend. Oh, mm-hmm. That's a great thing. No, she loves to go with her girlfriends. No, she doesn't love to go with her girlfriends. She has to go with her girlfriends.
Because they're the only ones who will listen.
Yeah, because you ain't fucking listening.
Yeah.
You know? So that is the thing we have to turn around with guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of the stuff that when I talk to guys and counsel guys on, it's like, that's the thinking that you have to turn around. You know, because no one, my dad never told me that. Mm-hmm. That generation of men didn't know any of that. This is the first generation of men, this baby boom generation of men, all of us born, you know, after World War II, right? To have to even examine that. Because before then, it was, dad said, this is how it's going to be. Or my husband said, this is how it is. And he's putting his foot down, and that's kind of the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to happen anymore, right? Now there's nobody putting their foot down. Now it's, okay, how do we work this thing out? And it's a hard place for guys to get in that we're one generation removed from, it's my word or that's, you know, it's my word.
Right, and it's been confusing both for women and for men because we used to at least have some sort of roles and responsibilities that everybody sort of figured out. That's, okay, when you're signing up for marriage, he's going to do that, she's going to do that, you know? And so people would expect that to be. And then, but it doesn't necessarily feel good and it doesn't necessarily work out that well. But that's kind of like, that's the rule book that people think they're supposed to follow. And now it's been very confusing as to who is in charge of what.
That's exactly right. And we got to, you know, early on it was in the 70s, right? When the women's rights movement was really in full effect, it was everybody's equal. So, what does that mean? Is that nobody's making a decision about anything?
Right.
You know, and another thing that did with guys as a side note, what the movement did with guys was it continually reinforced women and empowered women, but didn't remind guys that they were valid as well.
They're important too, I know, right? So we do this pendulum thing in our world, right? It's like one swing to another swing, back and forth.
Yeah. So then guys were like, well, then...
What about me? Yeah.
And I get, well, okay, then you make the decision then. Okay, well, I'm not going to open the friggin' door for you then. Okay, pull your own fucking chair out, you know? Okay, well, yeah, we'll go Dutch. So then this chivalry falls away, right?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes this antiquated... you know, things, chivalry. And then women start complaining secretly or not. You know, we're all the real men.
Yeah.
What happened to the real man? This is the real man. This is the man you wanted. You wanted to be equal to him. So you're equal. So pull out your own chair. You know, so it's a very confusing message. Right?
Sure.
Because we still need this, you know, this subtext of I still want to be treated like a woman and I still want to treat you like a woman. Mm-hmm. I still want to be respected as a man. So it's like, how do we get back to that?
Navigating tough.
Right?
Yeah.
And what is, and so what is the, of this masculinity appreciating femininity and vice versa? What is it of that picture that is good to keep because we want it? I still want to feel like the man in a relationship. You want to feel like the woman in a relationship. But it doesn't necessarily inform the rest of it. It doesn't inform who pays the check. Mm-hmm. It doesn't inform who carries the kid. It doesn't inform who stays home.
You know? Which I think requires couples to have a lot more conversations than they're willing to have a lot of times. People think that if they have to over-talk something, then it must be a problem, where
right.
in fact, you're two individual human beings. You have different needs and expectations that you bring into the relationship. So I know it's more feminine to be a talker, but, you know, men, I'm sorry, sometimes you got to step up. You got to be willing to also look at this as something that has to be sorted out together. It's not one person to make the decision over the other one.
Right. Right.
At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And I think that's part of the new, the redefining of what masculinity is post-women's rights movement, right?
Yes.
It's, we have to redefine what that means, meaning that now it's not, you're not gay if you want to talk about your feelings with your woman. There's nothing gay about that. That's, there's that sense,
and if you are gay, that's fine too. So whatever,
who cares,
right?
Right? But you know, but straight guys have that. You know,
oh, they have that fear.
Yeah,
there's so much homophobia still.
Yeah, but it's a, again, we're one generation removed from. Mm. You know, don't hold your hand like that.
Yeah.
Right? Don't talk about your feelings.
Right?
You know, so it's like, well, what does that mean if I talk about my feelings? Am I gay or am I weak? Am I not a man? It's a redefining of who you are as a man. You know. Now you have to talk about your feelings because women don't want to be left in the dark. And feelings are much more, are as important to women as fixing stuff is to guys. So
do you not think, though, that guys' feelings matter to them too, to some degree?
Do, not primarily.
Okay.
We don't lead with that,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, look, I don't have time to feel it, man. I got to go fix this thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? Well, you got to feel it sometime. Otherwise, it's going to manifest itself. It just does.
Yeah.
Right?
I like people, though, to at least appreciate that there's so much range and variation in humanity that you can be a really strong masculine guy and actually have a lot of feelings. And
yeah.
you can be a
yeah.
very thoughtful woman and not be as attentive or sensitive to your feelings. So can
sure.
go. There's huge amounts of overlap. But I do think that there's definitely more times than not you will find, you know, the male point of view is the fix-it point of view, and the woman's point of view is the feeling point of view.
Right.
And
right.
how do you blend those two together where neither one ends up feeling annihilated or ostracized or, you know, being thought of as less valuable?
Less, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm, I think that's really important. If you just tuned in, this is Dr. Deborah. We don't have, you don't sound anything like therapist Kelly, Marla.
I smoked a lot this weekend.
Let's get your higher voice. Anyway, we're here with Marlon Young. And if you'd like to give us a call, we're talking about relationships today. You can call us at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. We also got a couple of cool emails. Do you want to?
Yes.
I'll read one out. We can both address it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Dear hosts, my favorite topic is relationships. I'm newly married to a guy I adore. We're in our early 30s. We're getting ready to embark on having kids. However, we get into huge fights over how we think about raising them. He thinks we should completely dote on them, and I think we should keep our focus on our relationship while also putting time and effort into them. I worry that our special time will get lost. At the end of each fight, I end up feeling like I'm selfish and see him as not really caring about us so much. He says that his parents focused on him and his siblings without ever doing much for themselves, and he sees himself as totally well-adjusted. My parents pretty much neglected my brother and me, often leaving for weeks at a time with hired help to care for us. I'm thinking there should be a balance. Any suggestions, please?
Balance?
Yes.
Balance? Kids don't necessarily want you in people. Kids, as well, don't want you in their space all the time. You know, they need their own space to find their own creativity and to find their what makes them tick, for lack of a better explanation. So doting on a kid, I think, is to a certain degree doing a child an injustice.
You know, I strongly agree on that one. I think most of the couples that I've seen where they are totally child-centered, mm-hmm. and they've lost their couple-centeredness, mm-hmm. at all, they have terrible relationships. And then the kids end up becoming the splitting force between them.
Right.
And then the kids really learn how to play mom against right. dad. And then that can become such a dangerous situation for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk a lot about generational stuff because I think it changed so quickly in our generation. There's so many changes in our generation where how the sexes relate to each other and how we raise our kids together, right? We were left to our own devices a lot as kids. And I don't think that's just a Southern thing. I think I can speak for my generation. It's like, okay, go find something to do. You know, this is... mom's home with dad now, and you don't need to be here. Go find something to do. So you went and found something to do. You know, mm-hmm. and it's tree branch and turned it into a car, or
sure,
you know, under the house or out in the woods, and nobody was afraid that you were going to be kidnapped or anything. You know,
yeah.
And you got to develop that way. You
right.
got to develop on your own, figure out what your likes and dislikes were. So it didn't mean your parents didn't like you.
No, and I right. think it's also developmentally driven as well, right? It's different with a 2-year-old than with a 12-year-old.
For sure.
You know? So
for sure.
that as your children get to be more mature and capable of being more independent and by themselves, it's really actually very helpful for them to be able to learn how to self-soothe and to nurture themselves. Otherwise, they become very dependent on people later in life as well.
I totally agree with you. You know, I am...
It's interesting that these two found each other, though, right? It's like opposites attracted, right? She's probably drawn to him to some degree because he has such a that kind of parenting style, which is probably something she's really aching for,
right?
You know,
right.
She may sometimes even see him sort of as wanting some of that directed at her because she didn't get that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and he probably maybe on some unconscious level felt like he was maybe smothered a bit, and so she's more.
So she provides that for him.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah. You know, it's always interesting how people end up finding each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but isn't that what you do though? It's like you know what we're always searching for.
Well, they say opposites attract, but it's similarities that tend to keep people more together. That's what I've heard, anyway. Don't know that that's entirely true. Like we said, we are not the scientists here.
I like that saying has been around for a long time. Opposites uh-huh. attract. I don't know if it really works.
I don't know.
And opposite to what?
Yeah.
You know.
Good question.
I think the similarity and familiarity in the simplicity of you. Whatever the simplicity of you is, what makes you laugh, you know, at the very core of you, what do you find fun in? And can you find someone who understands that and appreciates
it? Oh, yeah, there's nothing worse than somebody who has a totally different sense of humor
right?
than you, right?
And
then it's like, why are you laughing at that? Why are you not laughing at that?
So can't watch a movie together.
No.
You know?
No, you don't look at the world out there with the same eyes, and you don't like notice things similarly. And then it's almost like you don't even have a cross-reference point sometimes.
That's right. Exactly. You know, because if you've got that, I this is what works for me, is if you can have great sex, right? You appreciate each other's physique the same, right? You like that about each other. Your sexual positions you both like, and the conversation about sex and your idea about sex is the same. And if you have the same sense of humor. Right, because body language is what it's like
90% of the communication.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
90%. So if
I'm guessing on that.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
It's high,
right? We say
totally
so much with our eyes and our grimaces. Right?
Yeah. So if you're out with your partner who understands you sexually and understands you know your sense of humor, you can look at them, and they know that look. Is something funny,
mm-hmm.
or you can look at them and they know that look is something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's great,
Yep.
Don't want to have to explain that to anybody. And if you, so if you've got those, then I think that it's a grounding force for you. So those similarities for me. And it's a very animalistic thing. I love talking about us as animalistic people. If, like, if we connect on an animalistic level, everything else is chattel, man.
To hear more about sex, hold on. We're going to have a word from our sponsor first, and then we will come right back to that.
Were you diagnosed with a mental health-related disorder and feel stigmatized so much you find yourself unable to reach out for help? At Vantage Point Recovery, we believe that every single human being has unlimited potential that is often unrealized. While a diagnosis offers a starting place to unpack what is blocking our clients from accessing that part of themselves, we do not believe they are their diagnosis. We believe that within every diagnosis lies a seed of hope and opportunity for our clients to realize more of who they really are so they can become who they want to be. Call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
And again, that number for Vantage Recovery is 888-668-5959. And in the not-too-distant future, we will have them up on our show website as well, so you can always find out more information about them. So, all right, back to sex. That's what everybody wants to talk about. You know, that you're talking about something that's actually a very, I think it's a really important topic, because I will say that at least for women, I don't know, I'm not a man, so I can't say entirely what your own cycle goes through in terms of life, but I will say that as a postmenopausal female, sex is really different. My relationship to sex is very different than it was when I was younger.
In what way?
Well, it's not as interesting to me. I'm sorry, Christopher. You know, it's just, I'm just not as interested. It's not that I don't like it and I'm disinterested. It's just, it's like the thought doesn't occur to me as it used to. And I know, like, men will talk about that they can actually have a thought about sex like every 5 seconds. That's probably overkill, but it can be very, you know, just like a fleeting moment. And it's one of those things that hormonally, it just changes. And so I think that it's often, you know, my little theory here is why, I mean, women are always so mad at men who get divorced and then they go with the 20-year younger relationship. But a lot of that is because if they go for women their own age group, let's say in her 50s or later, so they're going to find oftentimes they're going to have very disparate desires for sex.
Now, in your... Interesting.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Well, because there's so much discomfort too with hot flashes. It's like a lot of times it's like, you know, it's like a mother with triplets, right? You can imagine what Kim's mom
used to go
right?
Through, yeah,
right? The right? Three of them, right? The, these babies just like crawling all over you. It's like hot flashes. You know, it's like after a while, it's like, okay, I don't want to be touched.
Another hot flash?
Really? Yes, really? Or yeah, another one. So it's challenging. I think it becomes a little bit more difficult for aging men and women when that occurs. You know, there's a number of other things also that can affect sex drive. People who were sexually abused as kids or raped or things like that can have a big influence on somebody's relationship to their sexuality or level of interest in sex, not sexuality.
Yeah. So how do you think when you meet someone, right? And let's say then I was sexually abused and that's going to affect how I interact sexually with someone. That's something that you how do you couch that when you first meet someone, and that's someone you're interested in, how do you couch that?
So as a woman who's been sexually abused, how do you express to the man that you're interested in dating that could be a factor in your sex life together?
Yes,
is that
exactly.
The question? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I understood. Mm-hmm. I think that it's for one, it's important to be honest about it. I think it's really important for that woman to get the help that she needs to be able to try to very much work on separating that, because the perpetrator is not the man you're going to be dating.
Right.
You know, and sometimes we need to really make that clear distinction and separation in our minds so that those two don't get clouded together. But, you know, it's going to have an effect. And I think the man needs to be able to be very sensitive to that, be loving, you know, ask her questions about, is this something that, you know, occurred? Would we want to try something different? Mm-hmm. Be open and curious about how to navigate through the danger zones of that storm without ending up being perceived as someone who was like the perpetrator. Did that make any sense at all?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
100%. But Well, not but anything.
And I don't know that all men can handle that, quite frankly.
I totally agree with that.
You know, I think there's some men that would go, I don't want that. That's like, that's a trunk that's too big. So that's not going to fit in my car.
Right. So
that's baggage.
Can't put those bags in my closet. Can't. There's no room in there.
Did you ever see that show, Baggage?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It was the funniest. It was like a 30-minute, kind of like a game show, if you will.
Okay.
You'd have three, let's say it was three women were the contestants. They'd each have a big bag, a medium bag, and a small bag. And it was their secrets in this thing, their biggest baggage. So they'd start, and the guy had to hear their baggage, what it was, and then decide if he wanted to go to the next level to hear their second. So then you'd eliminate one. And then at the very end, you'd have the one person that he selected, and she's now going to open up her biggest baggage, which could be something like... you know, I have a fetish of some certain things, or know, I stole all my mother's credit cards when I was 15. You know, whatever it could be, right? And then at the final hour or the final minute, the guy would get to pick whether he could handle her baggage or not. It was just a riot.
That's funny.
It was funny. Sometimes
is that recent?
A couple years ago, but I'm pretty sure it's like on Netflix or one of those.
That's funny.
It's really funny. I'm so bad with names these days. One of those crazy talk show people. He's very... Oh, dear. I won't embarrass myself on air.
Craig Ferguson.
Who?
Craig Ferguson.
He's
the craziest one.
Anyways, it'll come to me, of course, later. Another problem with menopause. It's like the names, like they're gone. Like I can see the face, I can hear the voice, all of that, but the name is just gone.
Wow.
See, now, if men did that too, then they wouldn't remember that their wife didn't want to have sex with them. It would be no problem.
We conveniently forget stuff. Yeah, I don't remember that. We had that conversation?
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe we did. Anyway, here we are now.
Here we are. Yeah.
I'm mad now.
Here we are now. Yeah. So, I mean, I just think also for most people, depending on what's going on in their lives, sexual desire ebbs and flows. Like if you have a very highly stressful job or you're going through a really big life change, or let's say you've just, you know, lost a parent in your life, you know, a death or something. I think that people need to be sensitive to those kinds of issues. But again, it's up to the couple to be able to talk about those.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just like one stonewalling the other one. Like,
sure.
I'm just not interested. Because then you can have feelings of rejection and all of that. That is not good.
All of which can be resolved by just talking.
Talking.
So on the subject of men getting older as well, have you found in your profession that as men get older, the way they view sex changes as well?
I don't see that as much. I mean, I don't. I really see that, you know, throughout a good chunk of the lifespan, unless, again, somebody's going through a really stressful time or something, that, you know, men's sexual desire seems to be pretty strong. I mean, I think that's also a whole problem that's opened up, too, with pornography, that a lot of men are turning to more and more to pornography because it's ever-present, it's constantly available, and then they don't have to feel like they're sort of like pressing on their wife or their lover all the time.
Ah.
But it actually tends to ruin people's sexual intimacy.
How so?
Because become desensitized to the normal experience of human contact and interaction, and most porn is directed at servicing men, and it has very little to do with interactions and such. So that's a lot of the research that I've been studying, and also Kelly and I had this gentleman on who just, like, made this his life's work. He became such a porn addict that he couldn't actually function in the world at all, and he started to really dive into the whole male response cycle with that, and he ended up saying not from a moral standpoint, but boy, if you want to have a healthy sex life, get the porn out.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I know that's very controversial, and I wrote a book proposal that I couldn't actually sell that was called Porn, the New Mistress, to talk about pornography and its effects on couples, because I see a lot of that in my practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And all male publishers, they didn't want to have anything to do with somebody saying that porn wasn't good. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
What's your view on it?
Balance. Everything's a balance for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's okay to get upset, and sometimes it might be okay to scream. Not okay to do that all the time, right? It's balance. Introduce porn into you liking to watch porn, or introducing porn into a relationship where the two of you watch it. First, obviously, you have to just figure out if everyone.
Yeah, it's got to not be in secrecy. I think we would both agree with that. That's one of the fundamental problems too. Is oftentimes it takes on a life of its own,
right,
and it's not really a mutual consenting experience.
So you, but once you got that, then it's a balance.
Yeah.
A little porn, you know, a little bit of porn to for the enjoyment of watching porn, and sometimes a little bit of porn for education, right? Mm-hmm. What education in the, let's spice it up and do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll wear the cop uniform tomorrow, or I'll, you know, it's so cliche, the cop uniform. You know, the goblin, I'll wear the goblin uniform. Which isn't a, I don't think that's, any of that stuff is a bad idea, right? Because it's, because you can come out, it sometimes, everything sometimes can get to be routine, right?
For women, though, they're, well, the women that I end up seeing in practice with this is that they tend to feel, they start to feel bad about their bodies. They feel insecure. They feel like they're being compared. They tend to have a hard time with that. Now, I do see a lot of people with eating disorders and body image issues begin with, so you can add, that's definitely going to add insult to injury.
Yeah, you know, take the porn out, you still have that.
That's true.
You know, so then what do you do with that?
But that doesn't necessarily help solve it.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But the intimacy in your, in if you have a bad body image, the intimacy in your relationship
is going to suffer.
Exactly. Right.
Yes.
So you have to get to that place.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got to get to that place. You know, it's like, oh, I'm overweight. No. You got to work on that. You know, do you like being the weight that you are? Then get to a place where you appreciate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then do something about it. You know.
Isn't that the truth? That's such a significant component of this conversation is self-acceptance. How does one have a positive, healthy relationship if one doesn't have self-acceptance? I think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think it's possible.
Impossible.
Absolutely.
This is some of the some of the stuff we talk about with my buddy Jaden Scott, who we're starting this website. This is the One She Wants website. This is the website designed to help men create the better version of themselves to ultimately find the woman that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it starts with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the one of the first things that we teach guys to do is to get to a place where you have confidence. Because it's like, well, how do you have confidence? How do you walk with confidence in look in your pursuit of a partner if you don't have a good self-image of yourself, or a good image of yourself? Or if what you're doing for an occupation, because there are guys who work as a valet. And has his eyes on you. He's like, well, she's never going to look at me. I work as a fucking valet. What do I have to offer her? Well, how do you know she's not looking for a valet?
Exactly.
How do you know she doesn't really care about the vest? She doesn't care about what you do. How do you know? You don't.
You don't.
So that's your own image.
Insecurity.
So you've got to figure that out, man. You know?
Absolutely.
So we help guys, you know, the idea is I help guys do that in getting to a place where you absolutely appreciate who you are for what you are. And that's a lot of self, you know, that's a lot of looking at yourself and going for long drives and, you know, reading some of your, you know, your profession's work. Mirror work, which is a, you know, advocate of mirror work, you know, from a couple of people, like Dr. Louise L. Hay is one of my favorites as well. And she advocates a lot of mirror work. So get in front of the mirror and talk to yourself. That I've been doing since I was in my 20s, you know. You're your best audience, and you can be your worst audience. But
how many mirrors have you cracked?
Quite a few. You said what? You know, but that those, you know, and those listening, there are tons of these different things. Don't take my advice. Go out and start doing mirror work by yourself. Seek a professional and ask them, you know, what you think works best, what works best for you. But definitely get to a place where you have a more positive image of yourself.
I like that. Okay, we're going to do one more word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back with some closing thoughts.
Perfect.
Do you believe your problems of today are going to last forever? This may be a sign of a mental health-related disorder. According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's 2012 survey on health and drug use, it was shown that roughly 8.4 million adults in the U.S. suffered from mental health and co-occurring disorders. Vantage Point Recovery, specializing in intensive treatment for those struggling with mental health and co-occurring disorders, can help you make forever problems temporary. Located in Thousand Oaks, California, call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
Okay, we're back. Just for a few more minutes. Marlon,
yeah.
It's always good to see you. You have such a stimulating point of view about things.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Here's one. This is a quick one.
Okay.
We got another question here.
All right.
Why are men told that they have to be the ones to make for a happy wife, happy life? Why aren't my needs as a man just as important? Well, quite frankly, they are just as important. But you know what? Make her happy, she'll make you happy, everybody's happy.
That's sometimes it's good just to be quiet. Really? Uh-huh. Is that right? How's that make you feel? Okay. You want me to listen? Absolutely. Not fix it? Done. Do that. That took, what, 20 seconds? Do that, you'll be fine.
Yeah. You know, it is a funny say. Sometimes these statements are ridiculous when you say that, because it does sound like it's so one-sided, you know, happy wife, happy life. But I think that probably the origin of that was just to say, why do you always have to, like, one-up her, right? Because a lot of times men like to be superior to some degree, and so they'll one-up. And then that leads to an argument instead of just allowing, you know, sometimes, you know, if somebody else who you love is happy, doesn't that bring more happiness?
Yeah.
I mean, it does for me. I like it when my partner's happy.
That, if you're trying to do it with them, and they're hopefully trying to do it with you, then everything's fine. You know, and you know, back to this whole generational thing, and what I say in The Last Dinosaur is this is all holdover. It's, I have to have the solution to this thing. You know, well, you know, sometimes your solution sucks. Sometimes your wife is going to have, or your girlfriend, or your fiance is going to have the better solution. And if you don't shut up and sit down and listen to it, you're never going to hear a better solution. And one's not going to fall from the sky, you know, because you're just trying to solve whatever this problem is, which is, I just don't want to argue with you.
Yeah, and you know, that's brings me to a topic we didn't really even address today, and that's trust and how important relationships requires trust. Because if you can't trust, like if my partner gives me a solution, but I don't trust him, then I'm never going to really appreciate his solutions,
right?
So you've got to be able to build that. And sometimes that's probably the hardest thing of all to get as a ground in a relationship.
Yeah, it's a. I never like to hear trust. Yes is the answer, and I agree with you. It's some of the trust is one of those things I don't like to talk about. In that, I'd rather it just be done. Because when you talk about it and say, "Well, you know, I don't have trust in you yet," it's like this. Well, how do you? I don't know. Of course, you don't have trust in me. You don't know me,
right?
You know, so it's not even something that we need to talk about. Let's just do that until you feel that you trust me. It's not that we can say it and it happens.
I think it's helpful too. I tell people to not think of trust as an all or nothing thing. That it's kind of on a continuum, we can break it down to different things. Like I might trust that one of my girlfriends is always going to be late. Right? I may grow to trust that. Doesn't mean I have to dislike her or distrust her. I could just trust that she will be late, and I have other friends I trust will be on time, or I have trust in some people that they will hear me when I talk to them, and I don't always trust some people are going to listen to me when they have something bothering them and they don't have the capacity to do that. So it's kind of like it's not all or nothing, and it's not something that is across the board, like once you have it, it never fluctuates.
Yeah, I like that. That's and more people need to hear that because I think we think of trust in those terms. It's like, well, if I don't trust that you're going to be on time, then I don't trust anything else that you're doing.
Exactly.
Like, really?
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
Right? Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I highly recommend Marlon Young's audio, "The Last Dinosaur."
The
Where
last
can
dinosaur
people find that
audiobook? It's at the lastdinosauraudiobook.com.
Okay.
Go to that. That link, and it'll take you right to the page, and it'll tell you all about the book.
Yes. So what have you got going on in your life right now? And are you doing any acting?
Well, my personal life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any shows you want to promote that you're going to be on?
Yeah, actually, this Friday, the 8th. Is it Friday the 8th? I think it's Friday. I did a movie with 20th Century Fox Digital. A teenage angst movie called Mono. It'll be released on all digital platforms on Friday.
Yay! How fun! Congratulations!
Directed by this kid, Jared Conaway, who's a really good director, up and coming director. So that's going on. And then I'm on this show. I got added to the show called Survivor's Remorse on Stars, and it'll start to air July 24th.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being a fabulous co-host. Kelly will be back next week.
Oh, darn it.
Tune in to us anytime. You can also find us on docandtherapist.com. So Kelly and I have a website for that. And we appreciate your emails. We appreciate your time. And thank you so much for listening to us. And thank you to our sponsor, Vantage Recovery. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.